Blackwater, The Wagner Group, Executive Outcomes, The Flying Tigers, The Swiss Guard, The White Company, The Knights Templar, The Varangian Guard, Clercus of Sparta, Pythagoras the Spartan, Mentor of Rhodes, Socrates of Achaea. The list is endless. Mercenaries, guns for hire, soldiers of fortune, private military companies, private security contractors, dirty deeds done not so dirt cheap. History is replete with privatized militaries. Call them what you want. They have been around for a very long time, and they are very likely not going away anytime soon. And like it or not, wars are good, very good, for business. Furthermore, history tells us that more people are enslaved and killed by such means as greed, corruption, oppression, and tyranny than by any other means. So choose the red pill, remove your blinders, all of them, and take a good sensory inventory of what you're being told and shown to believe. Because here we go. Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of Oconus, The Contractor's Life. Talking from the relatively insular and bucolic rural foothills of northwestern Washington State, I'm your host, Scott Dresser. Life as a private security contractor in a hostile or a war-torn zone, or, as some call it, an austere or a non-permissive environment. Well, it is a mixed bag of blessings. Some good and some not so good. All in all, though, private security contracting is much the same as life. It is what you make it. The MENA region, or the Middle East North Africa region. Lands of enchantment, lands of mystery, lands of the old ones and the ancient ones. Myths, legends, folklore, maybe. If you believe what you read in the ancient and the holy texts, then you know that it all centered around what we refer to as the MENA region. That's right, the Mediterranean. And you probably also know that to every legend or myth, there is a base of at least some truth. Hello everyone. Picking up where we left off in the previous episode, there in the Bagram area, at, in, near, around the Bagram Air Base of Afghanistan. So on the project with Blue Hackle, and so there we are. We're roughly in the conversation here now, roughly around week four. And as I stated last time, things were kind of in a precarious position. For the most part, still at that time, most of us were getting along. But there were things that were starting to come up and crop up and start to rear their ugly head that became severe issues as that project continued. It wasn't just the lack of leadership from the then camp manager, who was supposed to be the site security manager. And like I said, we rarely saw these people on site, and certainly not doing any security. So why or how they thought that they were the site security manager when they were, I mean, for the most part, one of them, they were never really around. Let's just put it that way. All three of them over that period of time that was roughly about a year and a half before that project for Blue Hackle, in a way, went away. And I'll get to that later in this conversation. Not probably in this specific conversation, because I'm trying to keep this chronological as best as possible. So where we're at is things are starting to get a little divisive now, because the guys that I'm working with were part of a small team. There's only like five or six of us. And the camp security manager, and he didn't even, I mean, probably arguably the only person that really knew anything about security was the third manager that came along. But again, he was pretty much out of the loop and didn't do pretty much anything that needed to be done. These guys spent their day, for the most part, either in their office doing whatever the hell they were doing in there, maybe conversing with some of the managers from various other organizations or companies that were in the office, is part of their office in this office complex where they were at on our camp, where we had our rooms at the end of the day when we go back and sleep or whatever we needed to do back there. But so at this point, things, I guess one of the things that became pretty obvious, pretty clear right away, is that there were a couple exceptions aside from me. There was probably two guys other than me that didn't mind being outside in the direct sun, soaking up whatever was out there, the heat, the sun's rays. You know, we'd been through it before. It's kind of like not a big deal. And if you had been away from that particular environment for a time, your body and your mind remembered it. And within a few weeks, you were good to go. Probably didn't even take a few weeks, maybe a week or two anyway. So we were okay with it. The winters, I mean, like I said, nobody likes to be outside walking, standing around, doing whatever you got to do when it's snowing and it's below freezing. But in the summertime, we didn't have a problem with it because we did, on the facilities that we were at for the security aspect of it, we had a small trailer, which some might liken to, you know, something you might see in a trailer court. It was a small trailer. It was roughly, I think we measured it at one point, it was somewhere between 20 and 25 feet in length and approximately 10 feet wide. And that was our security office, if you will, there for at the facilities, the structures that were there where we were present, that we went because it was a 24/7 thing. So, you know, morning, noon, night, we had this to retire to, you know, for a break, get something to eat, coffee, water, just get out of the sun, get out of the cold, whatever it was. You know, we usually tried to, the way it should have been done, and there were other problems. So guys were in the, I guess it started with, and this was an everyday annoyance. So guys didn't want to be out in the sun. They didn't want to be outside in the cold. They didn't want anything. Instead of having a flowing team of guys milling around, walking around, checking on things, making sure that everything's the way it's supposed to be, and actually doing security out there, normally what would happen is we'd have one guy out and the rest would be in the trailer, taking a break, doing whatever they're doing, and these would be for extended periods of time. Once in a while, there would be a second guy that might come out because I constantly harped that, look, we need to have at least two of us out here, and there should be a third one that's walking around roving while the other two are semi-roving, but, you know, we're focused on certain areas. So I was able to get that to happen a few times, and by a few times, I mean more than just three. But it wasn't a frequent thing. So we had issues with guys not truly understanding what security is in that kind of environment. Again, with the exception of me and two other guys, there was no private security experience for these guys. They were all either just out of the military and not that long in it, or they were civilians with, you know, for practical purposes, no credible, substantial resume they shouldn't have been there is where I'm going. And so we had issues. So we had those kinds of issues. And we would have, because of the logistics involved and guys just being lazy and not wanting to do their job and not wanting to really chip in and live up to their lofty words. So the guy or guys that had to work night shift were frequently on their own. They didn't get breaks. And they didn't get their lunches or their meals and all the other things that you might need or want throughout the day, unless they just took it upon themselves to say, you know what, I need to take a break. And so at that time, if you didn't bring your food with you, so if you didn't have time to get to the DFAC and grab something and brown bag it, so to speak, and take it with you to work, chances were you weren't going to eat because, for the most part, everything was closed by the time the night shift guy showed up. because everything closed down around 5 p.m. Local time there. There were a few businesses that were open a little bit longer, but not much longer. I think one of them was like the coffee shop that was there, and I want to say it was a green beans facility. So there were a lot of issues that just weren't being addressed, and the manager wasn't doing anything to help address or resolve these issues. And, you know, the client, you know, it really wasn't their thing. As long as there was somebody there on site, they were okay. You know, as long as they didn't show up late and that kind of stuff. But so we had these kinds of issues, and they were going on, and this lasted for a protracted period of time. And as I've alluded to before, and I think I've kind of commented about it in previous episodes, probably even an earlier season, at one point, guys were getting really annoyed with the site security manager, the first one we had, and they asked and got to talking one day, and I forget how it came up, but you know, I said, hey, I can help get this fleshed out. We can find this guy out if he's what he claims to be and one thing another. Long story short, you know, so I'm emailing and talking to people that I know back home and just looking into this guy and checking out his claims, and I forget how it came up, but, you know, was able to find out his Facebook account. So we went in there and looked up some of his stuff and put it all together. Long story short, the guy was a fraud, a complete, absolute fraud. So we were able to, eventually oust him, get rid of him. He went out on vacation rotation, is what we would call it, a rotation, and he got the Dear John letter. But prior to that, he would, on a rare occasion, show up for 15 minutes, maybe 30 minutes, and he would, you know, just to put it in, because he knew that we were not happy with him and that we were complaining, and when I say we, not necessarily me, to the client about him, because the client at one point came to me, you know, and we talked with the other guys, but came to me, and they had a two-story steel-structured building in one corner of this area, and he was talking about, you know, how they have electrical outlets up there, there's a desk, it's got air conditioning, they've got a Wi-Fi service. I forget exactly where it was coming from. Anyway, so he was arguing that our site security manager could show up for the first 2 to 3 hours and certainly, and maybe even show up in the morning with us and stay there until about noon. And if he had to, even be there the whole day, because he can do everything he needs to do from the offices that were in that small two-story structure just as well as he could do it back at the camp. And it's like, yeah, you're right, he could, but he didn't want to. It was far more convenient for him to go back to his room when nobody was looking and do whatever he wanted to do in his room, or drive around to be the big man on campus, so to speak. So there were a lot of issues there with that guy, and the client, you know, I'm sure probably at some point he or one of his reps were communicating with the guys within Blue Hackle, the HQ part, and they were in Kabul, over at the what was then the New Kabul Center. They were there even before the New Kabul Center in that same area. So we had that stuff going on. There was a lot of foot traffic. A lot of visitors came out to where we were at. And one major concern was that anybody that good guy or bad guy, that knew anything about security, whether it was physical security or site security or venue security or any other force protection, anything, all they'd had to do is kind of survey the area, because there were open gaps where they could see, and it'd be like, you know, there's really not a whole lot of security here. And the biggest concern from the client's point of view, and I forget the exact technical terminology they used, but it was making sure that spy elements, and by that I mean like listening devices and stuff that could be used, electronic surveillance, whatnot, were not somehow slipped into the construction material or into the facilities, didn't get on there, weren't inserted in the ground, and one thing another. And so there was a lot of those kinds of issues that just weren't being addressed because we didn't have the manpower, we didn't have the willingness on the parts of most of the guys to really do what needed to be done, and certainly didn't have any direction, and certainly absolutely no leadership at all from the site security manager. So going back to what I was talking about in the previous episode, you know, leadership is a huge important thing, and you either got it or you don't. And this guy didn't. And what should have been a tip-off for anybody that things that people were listening, people were looking, they were paying attention, and that there were issues that had gone beyond our borders, so to speak. And I don't remember what group they were with, fifth group, seventh group, whatever it was. It might have been a higher numbered group because they did have a presence out there in terms of office and living space. But there was one guy, I remember seeing two or three of them, but there was one guy that was out there more often than the others that had access to where we were working. And they were looking around. They were surveilling things. And at one point, one of them was asking questions. He had permission authorization. I don't know if they had some sort of command element over this project, but they were asking questions about security and the rest of it. And, you know, guys like me would do my best to answer the questions without giving away everything. But I'm one of those guys, I'm not going to stand there and lie. I'm not going to tell them lies. So, you know, there were probably some times, and I don't remember the discussions really, but I'm sure that just like when you've got an absolute failure of leadership, it's like, you know, that's really out of our control, out of our hands. I would tell them, go talk to our guy, our boss, and well, where is he? And we tell him, and he say, okay. So I'm sure that when you stop and think about it, if you've been in an environment like this, you probably know what I'm talking about. Someone is always looking. Someone is always listening. So if you're not doing your job and you're not doing it properly, it's going to get noticed. And sooner or later, it will be resolved. Whether you like the results of that resolution or not, doesn't really matter. It is going to be resolved. And of course, it was. Like I said, that guy got, you know, a free ticket to stay where he was at. They told him just stay there when he went off on his vacation. I don't remember, Taiwan or wherever the heck he thought he was going. But those, you know, those are things that frequently happen on projects when the right people are not hired. For whatever reason or reasons, when you don't hire the right people, when you haven't vetted them properly, and when the people on the ground aren't doing their job to vet them, you know, these sorts of things are going to happen. And usually, but not always, you know, the leadership in charge, if you approach them correctly and address something with them, typically they're going to listen. They may not acknowledge it in a positive or affirmative way, because they know something's going on. And when you bring it to your attention, and especially if you can get a few other guys to help you out with it, it's, you know, again, those are things that need to be brought up to like your command element and just say, look, here's the problems that are really occurring and this is how they're really occurring. And as I've said before in other episodes, I think previous seasons, I don't want to get too far ahead again. I want to stay as chronological as possible, but it was brought to my attention about a year and a half later when I was part of another project, because I was part of three projects with Blue Hackle in that 2 or 3 year period that I was with them, where they had recognized, I think they did recognize that probably what I was saying was correct, but things had gotten to a point where these guys had pretty much become their own clique and were trying to drive a wedge in it and trying to get me out because they wanted to have their own little club and run things the way that they wanted it, regardless of the potential ramifications.
And, you know, I mean, we had a couple guys come and go who were complaining and really angry. I mean, like knocking on your door angry and want to talk to you, you know, because somebody told somebody back at HQ that they were trying to get off and so that they could go up in the mountains and go skiing or go hiking and whatever. And it's like, you know, you tell these guys, say, did you forget where you're at? Okay, do you forget where you are and what your mission is here? You can't just get up and go do those things. To get out, and I'm pretty sure it's the same to this day, you've got to have a trip ticket or a movement ticket or whatever. I mean, there's a process you have to go through to leave a camp or a base, whether you're, it doesn't matter what your position is. I mean, if you're a certain high enough title and rank, you probably personally don't have to, but someone in your movement team is going to go through the process. And this whole process is so that if something happens and you don't answer the radio call or you don't show up at the allotted zone at the time that you're supposed to be there, they know where to start looking for you. And it's like, you guys got to understand what you're talking about. If something happens to you, if you go missing for whatever reason, that's a lot of pressure on the military to have to go find you. Now they've got to take up some resources, have them stop what they were doing, and go out and do a search and rescue, try to find you. Okay, so not only does that become a problem in and of itself, okay, because the company's going to take heat, and then ultimately they're going to look at the company and the contract, and they're going to be looking for another provider. So everybody that's part of that project is going to lose because they're not going to be part of that project anymore because it's going to go away. So just a lot of stuff where guys didn't want to play by the rules for God knows whatever reason. I mean, they all had their reasons, their explanations. So we had a lot of that stuff that guys just didn't get, didn't want to get. There was one or two that tried to get it, wanted to get it, and we would talk. You know, I would talk with them. They would talk with me. But again, when the project, one of the project guys that was the third guy in line for the client, as I've mentioned before, at one point when he and I had a falling out, he took to them and they slowly but surely took to him. And that just greased the wheels and made it so much worse to the point that, and I'll get to that later. Again, I don't want to get that far ahead of myself. But he ended up going away, and that's interesting and almost a funny story in and of itself. So with that said, we'll put a wrap on this episode. And I want to thank you and thank everyone for taking time out of your day, afternoon, or evening to listen to me talk about private security contracting overseas, as well as sometimes some of my experiences as a private security contractor here in the States. Thank you to my wife, for whom I owe immeasurable gratitude. Thank you to my family, my friends, and all the male, or all the people, male and female, who have been and still are a part of my life. And I want to remind you folks, it takes a team. The grass is not always greener on the other side. Be careful what you wish for, because you might just get it. Stay humble, stay safe. Keep others safe by being aware and staying frosty. And until next time, keep it real.
Okonis the Contractor's Life extends a special thank you to music composer Kava Cohen and to Colin Perry of Ninja Tracks for allowing Okonis the Contractor's Life the use of Kava's song, Heavy Clutch, from the music soundtrack to the game Forza Motorsport 7. And also a big thank you to Andres Rodriguez, who can be found at the Fiverr website for his excellent original music scores.